The views and opinions expressed on this show are strictly those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of our sponsors. Ha!
Welcome to the Small Business Hour with your host, Mark Dio. It's 60 minutes of red-hot talk to help you develop your small business.
The Small Business Hour is brought to you by CBeyond, the last communications company a small business will ever need.
All right, folks, welcome to the Small Business Hour right here on the SBA Network. My name is Mark Dio. Joining me, the inimitable Matthew Walker. We're coming to you live from Los Angeles, and of course, we're your small business advocates. Our show is dedicated to helping you to become a lot more positive, more productive, and hopefully more profitable. Every single week, we bring you the experts in business development as well as expert advice to help you to run your business more effectively. And of course, this week is no different, Matthew, and we've got a good show lined up for folks. We have a great guest who will join us. I understand she's pretty lively, Carol Roth. We'll be talking to her about why people shouldn't become entrepreneurs, Matthew. So we'll get into that. A lot happening, I think, in the world. Certainly, there's no lack of world news. And when we think about that, that seems to overshadow the local news. And it has seemed to overshadow U.S. news, local news, but U.S. news. Particularly small business news, which really is kind of at the end of the line of U.S. news. But there's the world problems has maybe played into the hands of small business, Matthew, interestingly enough. Some of the problems in Asia, which are, of course, horrific problems in Asia, particularly in Japan and really all of Asia, due to the tsunami and the after effects and the nuclear radiation, whether it is there or not, has impacted significantly the exports out of Asia. And that has had a positive impact in some cases a negative impact, but in some cases a positive impact on U.S. entrepreneurs here in America as the labor and shipping costs in Asia increase. Companies here, stateside companies, particularly apparel makers, are able to really capture some of the share of that market by selling their textile products overseas with American labels. And I think this is primarily boiling down to a pricing issue where they're becoming more competitive, interestingly enough. Companies making, you know, just, I guess, you know, shirts and shorts and jerseys and tops and all of the stuff that we wear, oftentimes here in America, they're just not competitive. They're just not able to be competitive from a price standpoint with those in Asia, I guess particularly in China. And these problems have caused a significant increase, I guess a significant increase in production and in sales here in the U.S. So I guess something to keep in mind is that when we see global events occur, whether it's here in the U.S. Or whether it's overseas, not that we should be predatory in our taking advantage of those less fortunate, but those events do exist, and somebody has to fill the gap in terms of commerce. And so I guess it's something to keep in mind. Something to keep in mind is what we can do to fill the gap when there's, when there's a gap in the marketplace like that. Several of these U.S.-based textile companies are stating that their business has increased. Now, I don't know how that will happen on an ongoing basis, but
It is one thing that the U.S. used to have a huge textile manufacturing industry back in the 70s and up through probably the mid-80s, late 80s, I would guess it probably went about, pretty much dried up. But that was a significant part of the economy, especially in the South.
Oh, definitely. Oh, definitely. Well, you know, even here in L.A., I mean, you go back to, unfortunately, the sweatshops that existed, and of course, but even after that, big business. You know, Chicago is a textile mart.
Mm-hmm.
I remember a day when back in the 80s, when I lived in Chicago, the textile mart was just bustling and booming. And of course, nowadays, a lot of that space, most of that space in the textile mart right on the Chicago River, that's the one they make green, right, at St. Patrick's
yep.
Day. That whole gigantic, it's a gigantic building, is mostly leased out. It's like mostly leased out to, like, you know, investment companies, so
yeah,
insurance companies and lawyers and stuff. But back in the 70s and 80s, that wasn't the case. So sometimes international events can have a positive impact on what happens. And I think a lot of times there's misconceptions. You know, a lot of misconceptions, Matthew, about how some of the larger, particularly tech-oriented companies have gotten started. For example, eBay. How do you think eBay started? There's a lot of stories circulating, but you're a very a geek enabled guy.
Okay,
I will say you're highly geek enabled.
Well, if I remember correctly, eBay was started by the man's an immigrant from I forget exactly where, but I believe somewhere in the Middle East. The guy who actually founded the eBay, and he had a bunch of website names that he was coming up with, and eBay just happened to be one of them, and he wasn't able to use the one that he was trying to get, I remember correctly. And it was just a programmer in the Bay Area who came up with a site that he constructed that would let, I believe the original concept was to let businesses bid on products from other businesses. It was supposed to be a business-to-business portal originally.
Ooh.
And then they found that that didn't really work out too well for them to start, and then they brought in some other people to work on the project and the business, and from there it sort of took off and went from there. But it was, I remember there was a guy in the Bay Area, I forget his name, but he was the original founder of eBay, and I think he still owns about 10% of it.
Well, apparently there's been a story circulating, and I've heard this story before, that the founder of eBay, a fellow by the name of Amadir, so I think you're right, sounds like a Middle Eastern name, Pierre Amadir, could be French too, started the company because his fiance needed to find more Pez dispensers.
Yeah, I've heard the Pez dispenser story, that is sort of popular internet lore, but
I guess this has been debunked now.
Yeah,
the Pez story. But I guess the drama of something as simple as starting a gigantic company like this, looking for Pez dispensers. Now, I'm not doubting that you could find Pez dispensers on eBay. About it, probably in every
Pez dispenser
every
ever made, you could probably find on there.
You could probably find on there. And apparently, you know, and then there's another one, I guess, that he was looking, he had a broken laser pointer for sale, and it sold for $14 on this network, which later became eBay. I'm not sure I believe that one. Another one, YouTube. How did YouTube start?
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, there were three founders in YouTube, and apparently, the lore is that this happened at a dinner party in 2005 and in San Francisco, naturally. Little dinner party happened, and they had some trouble finding a place where they could share the videos or photos from the dinner party. And I guess videos, obviously, from the dinner party.
Mm-hmm.
And they created YouTube. And the only problem is that the third partner of YouTube said, "What? I never heard that." Obviously, internet lore.
Yeah.
And here's another good one. I mean, we had this fellow on our show, Howard Schultz, from you know, founder of Starbucks.
Yeah,
very unassuming guy, by the way. It's almost like when you talk to him, it's like, wow, you were the founder of Starbucks. And I'm not saying he was like dumb or anything. He wasn't. He was a very bright guy, but just a really kind of a humble, you know, I started it. Yeah. It's like, so it's like, well, it's like he started a hot dog stand or something. But nevertheless, how the logo, you know, that mermaid logo, the famous Starbucks logo, that he poured over many, many books of old 16th century woodcuts of mermaids, and thought this was only problem is that the books that he was talking about, the Norse were long gone, so it couldn't have been it couldn't have been that. And bottom line is
they just changed that logo like 6 months ago. I remember
they kind of modified the logo. Yeah. They modified the logo. I'm not sure how much of a good idea that was, frankly.
Sort of the same, but different. I can't.
It almost looks like the Statue of Liberty with the stars and all that on it now.
I couldn't, if you were to show me the two logos, the before and after, I couldn't tell you which is which. So
it's less complicated, and many times that is that is the evolution of logos. Mm-hmm. They become less complicated, and Federal Express and FedEx, of course, and the various iterations there. But something to keep in mind, kind of keep it simple, I guess. Keep it simple. Maybe this lore is not a bad thing from a marketing standpoint, because it does sort of drive interest, doesn't it? And whatever we can do to create interest, a little bit more interest in our businesses. Nevertheless, got a big show, really big shoe, as the old Ed Sullivan. Did you ever see Ed Sullivan, Matt? You were too young for Ed Sullivan.
He's before my time, but I'm familiar with Ed Sullivan.
Really, really big shoe. When we come back, we'll be talking to this Carol Roth. Apparently, is pretty lively, so I'm interested to see. I need some liveliness this morning to awaken me, Matthew. But nevertheless, you're listening to the Small Business Hour right here on the SBI Network. Go nowhere, folks, because we will be right back. The Small Business Hour is brought to you by CBeyond, the last communications company a small business will ever need.
CBeyond, big solutions for growing your small business. For over 10 years, CBeyond has provided small businesses with the communication tools for success. We're proud to offer services such as local and long-distance voice, mobile, and broadband internet access, along with enhanced features like voicemail, email, web hosting, data backup, file sharing, VPN, and more. So as your business grows, we've got you covered. CBeyond, the last communications company a small business will ever need.
Winning means sinking more shots, blowing away the competition, coming in first. Being second might have been okay for mom, but today, coming in second just gets you a pat on the back and a, hey, thanks for trying. Dale Carnegie Training gives you and your people the skills you need to win. For salespeople, how to be more strategic, earn and keep that important client. From prospecting to information gathering to negotiations to closing. For managers, it's how to win the commitment of your team. Build teamwork and loyalty like never before. A company where people excel. Dale Carnegie Training isn't some boot camp with a drill instructor who breaks you down and leaves you in a daze. And it isn't going back to school for years and pulling all-nighters while you're still trying to do your regular job. It's the right training for the real world that teaches you how to win more often. It works and it sticks. Call now, 562-427-1040. Face it, as a business owner, manager, or salesperson, you're paid for results. Winning results. So make winning a habit. Call 562-427-1040. Come on, you were made to win. 562-427-1040.
Are compliance issues keeping you up at night? Are you worried that your labor law posters may be out of date? Do you even know how to protect your business from fines of thousands of dollars? Without a dedicated compliance department, it's hard to remain on top of the constantly evolving labor law legislation at the state and federal level. That's why the experts at Compliance Poster Company provide their clients with a dedicated research department. The innovator of the all-on-one compliance poster. Compliance Poster Company has simplified labor law compliance. Just hang one poster, and you're in compliance with all federal and state labor law mandates. Then when labor laws change, you'll receive an email to let you know. End your restless nights. Call the compliance experts at Compliance Poster Company today at 1-800-817-7678. That's 1-800-817-7678. Once again, 1-800-817-7678. Or on the web at ComplianceProster.com. Ha!
The Small Business Hour is brought to you by CBeyond, the last communications company a small business will ever need.
All right, folks, welcome back to Small Business Hour right here on the SBA Network. Mark Dio, Matt Walker with you. And, of course, we're coming in from Los Angeles. You are your small business advocates. You know, Matthew, I was a while back I was walking by the a store that was being built here in California, in Palos Verdes here. And I looked in. It used to be my favorite ice cream store, which – obviously, I don't need any more. And I said to the young lady, I said, what kind of store is this going to be? She said, it's going to be a candle store. I said, you're going to sell candles. She said, we're going to sell candles. I said, are you going to sell anything else? She goes, no, we're going to sell candles. I said, now, have you done a little bit of a study? Or, oh, no, this is going to be great. I've been wanting to do this for years. And guess what went out of business? And, of course, this was 8 months. Well, guess what went out of business yesterday, Matthew?
The candle store?
The candle store. People are starting businesses left and right. Money Magazine, folks, says the startup rate of businesses is at a 15-year high. We're starting more businesses now than we ever had, and that's over the last 15 years. 500,000 businesses a month are being started. Yet, businesses that create employees are dropping radically. People are getting in the business that shouldn't be getting into business, and that's what our guest is going to talk about, Matthew. Her name's Carol Roth. She's a business strategist. She's a Wharton School graduate, so I might not even understand some of the words that she says. So I hope you have your dictionary handy, Matthew. 16 years she's been doing consulting. She's raised $1 billion in capital, mergers, acquisitions. Check this out, Travelzoo. She was a director. $60 a share, $1 billion cap. So she knows what she's doing. She's got a TV deal. So let's be nice to her, Matthew, because maybe you know she can get her on our show. Matthew, she has an action figure doll. Can you imagine?
Mm-hmm.
Like G.I. Joe or something. Anyway, welcome to the show, Carol Roth. A pleasure to have you here. Carol.
Mark and Matt, so delighted to be here with you.
Mm-hmm. Now, I want to hear about the action figure doll, but we'll get to that. And she's cute, and she's cute. We'll get to that later. You say 9 out of 10 businesses fail to make a profit. Okay, the SBA says 75%, but most of them go bunk. Why is that, Carol?
I think that a lot of the reason why so many businesses fail or fail to succeed, we could debate the semantics of this all day long, Mark, but I think one of the key reasons is that people go into business for the wrong reasons, with improper mindset based on myths, without doing everything that they can do to stack the odds in their favor. I think that a lot of times in our country, we are still treating the American dream like it was 1930. And if you think about 1930, when the American dream was coined, we didn't have Walmart, and we didn't have Nike, and we didn't have CVS, and we didn't have Microsoft. And today, we have pretty much everything we could ever want or need, and a whole bunch of things we could care less about. So it is harder than ever to really compete in the marketplace to get your customers' attention. Even if you have something that they want, it's still that much harder for you to do it and for you to succeed at it, which means you need more capital, more runway, and a lot more preparation up front, which unfortunately a lot of people really don't want to do.
Now your new book is called The Entrepreneur Equation, and folks, already a bestseller on Amazon.com, so go check it out, Entrepreneur Equation. It's lime green. That's how you'll know it. It's lime green. And so in this book, now I haven't read this book, to be honest with you, because you're going to send me a copy of it, signed, and then I can read it. But but that's assumptive of me. But in the book, I understand you talk about, you know, some of the reasons. I guess, you know, the candle shop. I mean, I'll tell you, I really honestly felt bad for this poor person, because they probably invested their whole life savings, Carol,
to open this. And it really was probably a passion with them. And they had some beautiful candles and stuff in there. But unless SCE went out of business and we had no power for, 6 months, they were bound and doomed for failure, right?
I was going to say, it's about execution. I mean, there are businesses that are candle businesses. Yankee Candle has done very well. I know other companies have done well with candles in other formats. However, one standalone candle business is going to be really, really challenging to execute because you need all the traffic coming into your store to pay for your overhead. And I think what happens is a lot of people are in what I call business lust. They are in lust with the idea. They are so overcome with the emotion about something that they're passionate about that their judgment is compromised. And that's why I come in as the business wingman, so to speak, when they're doing this business beer goggling and saying it's not necessarily as good looking as you think it is. And, it may seem like a really great idea or you may love it, but that doesn't mean that it's a viable business. And that doesn't mean that the reward at the end of the day is big enough for the risk that you take on. And I think that's where a lot of people sort of don't do enough math before they go down the entrepreneurial path. They don't sit and say, okay, realistically, how many people do I need through these doors every day buying candles in order to make enough money, not just to cover the overhead here, but to put money in my pocket that's as much as I could get getting a job somewhere else. And that's the math that doesn't happen up front.
Yeah. Now, this has to happen because if we look at our economy, I mean, right now we have a lot of, there's a lot of government jobs out there, and that was, strategic to perk up the economy, and some say it worked, some say it didn't work, whatever. Point is, those jobs aren't going to be there now forever, obviously, and the whole paradigm of these jobs for life is changing. I mean, look at Wisconsin and all this, and Ohio and all this. So it's really the savior of our economy are these small businesses, which are contributing to, a greater part of our economic growth. But yet these businesses are failing at a faster and faster rate. So what are some of the basics? Again, so you mentioned, let's take a pencil and a calculator out and, actually work that baby out before we open our store or our business. What else should entrepreneurs be doing or potential entrepreneurs be doing?
I think there are a couple of things that are really key to timing, because sometimes it's not that you shouldn't open a business, it's just that you shouldn't open it right now because you haven't done enough to stack the odds in your favor. So two of these key things are around finances and experience. On the finance side, it's really important to have not just enough money to open the business, but also enough money to operate the business for a couple of years while it gets its footing underneath it, and also enough money to live on in the meantime. So all these people who have lost their jobs and who are in this panic because they don't have money coming in aren't going to have the capital, likely, to make the business succeed. Because when you start a business, you don't have people who are lined up around the block usually waiting for you to open. It takes work. You have to market. You have to build up that customer base. Or if you have a service business, you may have a long sales cycle. So you're not able to pull money out of the business and put it into your pocket most of the time right away. So that means you really need to look at not just how much it costs to start the business, which is what I think a lot of entrepreneurs do, especially in these economic times, but they have to have enough money to be able to get it to that point where it stabilizes and it has a foundation. So I think that's one thing that's really, really critical, and it may mean that you have to go back and take a job that you currently think is a little bit beneath you, but you're doing it in order to stockpile some money to give yourself the opportunity to take a run at business when you're making a better decision, because if you're in a place where you have to choose between funding your business and paying your mortgage, that's going to be a lose-lose proposition for you, Mark.
Now, I'm sorry, go ahead, Carol.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, I think that's critical, and I was going to talk a little bit about experience, too, if that's helpful.
Sure, please.
So I think another thing, Mark, that they can do is they can really go and get some experience. So you can do that in one of two ways. One, you can learn on somebody else's dime. I mean, if you want to open a restaurant, which in my experience, every third person who comes to me wants to open a restaurant, then go work in someone else's restaurant first. Just because you've eaten in one does not qualify you to be able to run one. And so, I mean, you know exactly.
Yeah, I watch them in the kitchen. I sit so I can watch them, and I think I've got it down.
Right. So, you know, nights and weekends, go or take 3 months off and go work in someone else's first. See if you're any good at it. See if you still enjoy doing it after a couple of months, because most of the time, once that shiny newness wears off, you go, oh, boy, yeah, I don't really see myself doing this for the rest of time. So you go do that on someone else's dime, or else start the business on a small scale as a hobby that makes some money. I call it a jobby first, and test it out to see if it's viable before you go and invest all of your money and your savings into doing it on a big scale.
Oh, I got it. So not a hobby, not a job, but a jobby. Okay.
A jobby, exactly.
and again, a lot of people say, well, what kind of business should you get in? Oh, you should get into something and do something that you're passionate about. Turn your hobby to a business. And that's really kind of the worst thing we can do, isn't it, for a number of reasons, right?
I think so. You know, I think that one of the fallacies out there is that you need to make a living out of whatever it is that you love to do. And the reality is that business is all about serving a customer need. If you want to be me-centric, then definitely get a hobby first instead of a business. And I always use the analogy, if we're supposed to do what it is we're most passionate about in life, my husband's greatest passion in life is watching the television show Dexter. So with that logic, he should be a serial killer.
Maybe he is. Carol, you'll find your doll shredded in the corner with a knife stuck in it and ketchup poured on it.
Yes.
Oh, I don't know.
Go ahead.
You were an investment strategist. I guess you still are an investment strategist for years. And, you know, you were a Wall Street investment banker and stuff like that. Doesn't seem like you're an investment banker, frankly. Seems like you're a at the comedian shows. But anyway, bottom line is, you know, you were the person that you know, had to decide, along with others, obviously, if you should give money to people and stuff.
Yes.
And I think a lot of people that go into business, and maybe even people in business, I know some folks, I mean, I have some clients, obviously, who have, you know, fairly large businesses, actually, you know, $10, $20 million business, and they're debating whether they should expand that business by bringing in external investors. Talk about that. What are some of the upsides or downsides to that before we make that decision? And aside from the numbers, because, you know, we get our CPAs and lawyers involved with that, but just from the emotional side, what do we have to be careful of?
Yeah, it's a great question, and it's one of those situations where there isn't a right answer. It is just a bunch of pros and cons. And so I think if you're going to bring in an investor, you know, once again, I always go back to this risk and reward framework. You know, what is it that you gain by bringing in this investor, and what is it that you're giving up? So you're gaining, you may be able to grow more quickly. You may actually be able to have a bigger company, because a lot of times when it's just your own money tied up in it, you're so emotionally tied to it that you make more conservative decisions. And when you have that outside capital, it really lets you kind of expand and go to the next level. That being said, that most investors have a time frame on their money. And so that means that they want to have a mechanism to get out of the business years, sometimes 5 to 7 years. So that may mean that your objective, if you want to stay in this business for the end of time, may be very different than theirs if they want to get out in a couple of years. So you have to then decide, okay, well, what does that mean for me if they want to go ahead and sell this business? And am I going to be put out of a job because they sell it to a company that doesn't need me?
Sure.
And then it's also, you know, you really do have to answer to those investors or even to lenders. I mean, they are people who now have a stake in some way, shape, or form in your business, either through an equity stake or through some sort of an agreement that you've signed with them if you take on debt. And you have to follow those rules. And if you're somebody who is used to sort of operating on your own and not having to answer to anybody, it becomes very, very challenging. And a lot of times that gets complicated because people will take money from people that they know well, which then takes a personal relationship and layers a professional relationship on top of it. And emotionally, that can be very draining, Mark.
Yeah, it's very complicated. And but I see this happen all the time. You know, you have very strong personalities leading companies. It could be, you know, $1 million or $20 million, $100 million company. It doesn't matter. And then what happens is they end up taking on investors who ultimately now have different ideas about, you know, where they want to take the company, and it becomes frustrating. And so what happens is their quality of life actually suffers. You know, they might have the dollars that they wanted, but, you know, their baby, which is this company, unfortunately, is now going in a completely different direction. And it's like a freight train. There's really no stopping it. So it can become a very difficult situation. And yes, defining the outcomes that are desired, I think, are important. You know, get into motives. You know, what is the motive of this investor? So I think we need to be careful as well. What else in the entrepreneur equation do you feel really sets it apart as a resource for folks thinking about or in business looking to expand?
I think the number one thing that sets the entrepreneur equation apart is that I don't believe there's one size that fits all or one answer that fits all. And so it's not a 7 steps to success. It's not follow this magic plan and you will succeed, but rather it's a framework. We all have very different definitions of what success means. And it, like you said, Mark, it could be financial or it could be quality of life or it could be some combination of both. And we all have different circumstances and different objectives. So it, in my mind, it's always been impossible that you could have this 7-step plan to success if we all have different definitions of what that success is.
Sure. Yeah.
And so I really wanted to create a framework where it was a lens for you to be able to evaluate your own situation based on what was going on at your life at any particular point in time, very, very specific to you. And so I think having that framework, instead of saying this is the right answer, this is the formula you have to follow, really makes it you know, very, very difficult. Different from what's out there.
So now, speaking of you, you want to be the new Suze Orman. I read that somewhere when I was checking out your stuff. And you certainly, you have the personality, you've got the background, you've got the looks, and you have, I guess you have a TV show that, at least a pilot that someone has put some dough behind. Is that right? A production company?
Correct. We're in editing on the pilot right now. And I would say, I not that I want to be the new Suze Orman because she does personal finance and I do business, but I do, I've always admired her model in terms of having a, you know, a lifestyle brand that was around finance. And so in terms of having that media and lifestyle brand around business and entrepreneurship, when we have so many people who are involved in that in our country, I think that that's a really amazing opportunity.
I think it is. And, you know, no one has successfully done that. They've done it on, you know, with finances and stuff like that, or real estate and stuff like that. Of course, that boom is over with. But no one has done it with the, you know, with the several, you know, 20 million, 27 million businesses here in the United States. And it is it is odd and just kind of strange that no one has been able to do that. So,
well, that's what I'm here to do, yes.
Well, you sound like you got the energy to do it, and you sound like you got the gusto to do it, so that'll be exciting. Okay, now, how do I get a doll? Because I want to get one of those, and my wife's going to be like, what is going on with him? He's regressing to Barbie status.
Yes. So, well, it depends. If you're a woman, you tend to call it the fashion doll, and if you're a man, you tend to call it the action figure. But I have a fantastic client called Integrity Toys, and Integrity makes these great collectible fashion dolls. And so for the promotion for the book, we did create the Carol Roth Entrepreneur Equation fashion doll / action figure. And we're actually doing a special incentive on it right now for anybody who purchases 10 books. If they email the receipt to books, B-O-O-K-S, @carolroth.com, I will send them out a fashion doll.
I love that. I love that. And it's a cool fashion doll. It does look like you, too, strangely enough. I think you should have a gun. I think you should have a gun, like a 10, you know, 9mm in the other hand, though, to really make a...
That's the second edition. Yes, that's the second edition.
That's the second issue. Well, Carol Roth, it is very interesting to talk to you, and certainly we'll be waiting to hear. And, of course, Matthew, let's get ready for our guest appearance on the Carol Roth, upcoming Carol Roth television show, when she has Matt Walker and Mark Dio there and interviews them. What do you think, Matt?
Sounds good to me.
Yeah, yeah. Don't hold your breath on that one. Okay. Well, thank you, Carol. Folks, go check it out. It's called The Entrepreneur Equation, and new bestseller by Carol Roth. You'll be hearing more about her. Check out our website, theentrepreneurequation.com. Carol, thank you for being with us here on the Small Business Hour today.
Oh, it's been completely my pleasure. I really appreciate the opportunity to speak with you, and look forward to doing it again.
We'll do it again. Thank you, and my our very best to you, Carol. Folks, you're listening to the Small Business Hour right here on the SBN Network. Go nowhere. We'll be right back.
The Small Business Hour is brought to you by CBeyond, the last communications company a small business will ever need.
CBeyond, big solutions for growing your small business. For over 10 years, CBeyond has provided small businesses with the communication tools for success. We're proud to offer services such as local and long-distance voice, mobile, and broadband internet access, along with enhanced features like voicemail, email, web hosting, data backup, file sharing, VPN, and more. So as your business grows, we've got you covered. CBeyond, the last communications company a small business will ever need.
Winning means sinking more shots, blowing away the competition, coming in first. Being second might have been okay for mom, but today, coming in second just gets you a pat on the back and a, hey, thanks for trying. Dale Carnegie Training gives you and your people the skills you need to win. For salespeople, how to be more strategic, earn and keep that important client. From prospecting to information gathering to negotiations to closing. For managers, it's how to win the commitment of your team. Build teamwork and loyalty like never before. A company where people excel. Dale Carnegie Training isn't some boot camp with a drill instructor who breaks you down and leaves you in a daze. And it isn't going back to school for years and pulling all-nighters while you're still trying to do your regular job. It's the right training for the real world that teaches you how to win more often. It works and it sticks. Call now, 562-427-1040. Face it, as a business owner, manager, or salesperson, you're paid for results. Winning results. So make winning a habit. Call 562-427-1040. Come on, you were made to win. 562-427-1040.
Are compliance issues keeping you up at night? Are you worried that your labor law posters may be out of date? Do you even know how to protect your business from fines of thousands of dollars? Without a dedicated compliance department, it's hard to remain on top of the constantly evolving labor law legislation at the state and federal level. That's why the experts at Compliance Poster Company provide their clients with a dedicated research department. The innovator of the all-on-one compliance poster. Compliance Poster Company has simplified labor law compliance. Just hang one poster and you're in compliance with all federal and state labor law mandates. Then when labor laws change, you'll receive an email to let you know and your restless nights. Call the compliance experts at Compliance Poster Company today at 1-800-817-7678. That's 1-800-817-7678. Once again, 1-800-817-7678. Or on the web at complianceposter.com. Ha!
The Small Business Hour is brought to you by CBeyond, the last communications company a small business will ever need.
All right, folks, welcome back to the Small Business Hour right here on the SBN Network. Mark Dio, Matt Walker with you. That was our friend Carol Roth. She's a pretty interesting lady. Get her book. Go check it out. Maybe you shouldn't be an entrepreneur. Or maybe you should. I don't know. Or maybe you are, and here's some things you can do, clearly, to become a more successful entrepreneur. The Entrepreneur Equation by Carol Roth, wherever books are sold, obviously. Probably Amazon.com, that's where most people get books these days. But nevertheless, some positive stuff, Matthew. Some good positive things for us to keep in mind. Also, I guess some positive things this week announced here in California, 100,000 new jobs created in February, Matthew.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty surprising when you consider some of the sentiment. There's still quite a bit of negative sentiment, I think, about the economy and about demand in general from most industry sectors.
That being said, 96,500 jobs, the exact number, is the jump. Apparently, you know, as opposed to 700 jobs in January. So that's a pretty huge jump.
Yeah, it was basically, I think they said the last 11 months they did about that total. Yeah. And then in February they were able to do that in 1 month, which I'm sure that there's some seasonal issues that are causing that to be probably a little bit higher than it normally would. Like in there they mentioned, you know, 15,000 private sector jobs in Hollywood, for example. And this is what they call sort of pilot season, so a lot of new productions are ramping up right now. And a lot of those will be going away in the next couple months as those pilots don't get picked up. But I think it said in there in the article that it was being led by strong hiring in Silicon Valley, which would be good for the tech sector and a lot of those jobs that have sort of died out.
Leisure and hospitality, about 6,000 jobs, 9,000 in transportation, and even construction, interestingly enough, has added more jobs. I do notice that the real estate sector is becoming a little bit more positive, certainly commercial real estate. Commercial real estate hasn't dropped off much at all, but it seems like residential real estate is becoming a little bit more fired up. And of course, with Silicon Valley, I guess Google hiring 6,200 people. Of course, that's international, so I don't know how many were in the United States, but that's got to be a positive move.
Mm-hmm.
Facebook hiring 3,600 people, or 2,000 employees. I'm sorry, 2,000 employees. A whole bunch of Silicon Valley, as you say, a bunch of tech companies hiring, and that's understandable. So I guess that brings the unemployment rate down a bit from 12.4 to 12.2. And, of course, that is – we're still over the national unemployment rate, which was 8.9, but nevertheless – and many say the effective unemployment rate is more like double that. I don't know if that's the case. It's hard to know which is political posturing and propaganda from both sides. You know, you've got the Democrats trying to really emphasize things are better than they are, and the Republicans trying to say they're worse than they are. So it's hard to really get your arms around what are the facts. I guess I gravitate towards what was said on our show, that it's not about our – Zig Ziglar said it. It's not about our national economy, Matthew. It's really about our personal economy, and that's what we have to seek to change. That's really what counts for us, and there's a lot of ways to do that now. There's a lot of ways to do that. You know, we look at the internet, gives us opportunities. I know a lot of businesses have participated in the – Groupon or the online coupon business has been pretty hot, especially like for retailers attempting to drive in business. But I want to caution people in this area because we have to understand it's good to generate traffic and it's good to generate additional sales. But if we're losing money on the traffic we generate, or we're losing money on the sales, then, again, that's not going to do us a lot of good. So we have to be careful. Maybe that's a strategy. The other problem with Groupon type or coupon type selling is that it can possibly change your perception from a sort of a highline provider, a premium provider, a value provider of products or services, to one that is strictly focused on price. And a lot of times, what happens is, you know, you could lose more because your loyal customers. They have to take advantage of these discounts as well, and they might be very happy paying the price they're paying, and you might be losing more discounting to your current customers who are paying your demand price than you're gaining from getting new customers.
Yeah.
It's kind of a bit of a double-edged sword, so what I recommend people do is test. You know, test Groupon. Test Groupon with Or any of these sort of online. What are some of the others, Matthew?
Groupon, Social Buy, Living Social. Those are probably the big three.
Social, yeah, that's a big one.
Yeah, and there's probably tons more.
Probably 50 of them now that do these things.
But you know, test it with a product that might not be your core product. You know, don't run this on your core.
And also
product.
These tests, when you set them up, you can have a limit on the number of the deals that you offer. So if it's going to be something where you're not sure how it's going to work and you don't know if you're going to make money on it or not until you try it, you can set a limit of, say, you know, 300 or 500 or whatever number makes sense for you. So you sort of limit your exposure in case you offer a deal that's so good that you're losing money, you would be able to limit that to a certain number of people rather than just a free-for-all where you might wind up with thousands of responses that you aren't able to accommodate.
Yeah, and plan for the what are the intrinsic costs, because sometimes it's the intrinsic costs that will chew up your profit or even push you from a profitable pricing scenario to a loss on every sale. I mean, you don't want to end up with a loss on every sale unless that's your strategy. I mean, if you're strategic about it, fine, but you know, the problem is, you know, shipping can chew you up. You've got a plan for shipping, and you know, Matthew, on the internet, I guess you can do that if you price things right. You understand your competition. You can move the shipping cost around based mm-hmm. on units or based on weight or something like that. Or you know, 2-for-1 deals. You want or just administrative costs. I mean, you know, don't forget to actually factor in the cost of administration mm-hmm. of this kind of program. And sometimes the administrative cost can push you over the edge. So definitely some stuff to think about when it comes to, you know, when it comes to these sort of group buys. And, you know, not just here in America, you know, even in other areas of the world, because we really are living in a global economy, and it's really happening for small businesses as well. We really have to look at, you know, how we're going to price more effectively. I guess a recent interesting information out of Canada, Matthew.
Mm-hmm.
Small businesses, I guess, holding off on credit because of the credit crisis, and looking at cash, you know, and maybe even offering bigger discounts on cash. I guess the debt in Canada has eclipsed that of the United States last year. That's kind of hard to believe. You look at Canada's gross national product. It's like a tenth of what our gross national product is here.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a tenth. How is it possible that Canadian debt could outstrip American debt? Either Americans have really, really cut their debt significantly, or these Canadians are really living on the day. They're living on the edge up there, or something. But certainly, cash is king right now. So, if you have it, you want to hang out. I read an article recently that this might not be the best time to pay down your debt. I guess, you know, because of interest rates and stuff like that. But that does seem to be what everyone's doing. But oftentimes, economic success is doing the opposite of what everyone's doing, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what it really boils down to. Nevertheless, just some interesting facts about the economy. Upcoming guests, I want to just say, before we sign off for today, Matthew, we have some interesting upcoming guests. Our friend Tim Sanders is coming back, isn't he?
Tim Sanders will be back, I believe, hopefully next week. We should have that confirmed in a couple days. So hopefully we'll have Tim Sanders next week.
That will definitely be a good show. He's always a great guest. And reading, I haven't fully read, but I'm reading his new book. And some really interesting stuff. You know, he's I want to say Tim Sanders seems to be the new Dale Carnegie of our age.
In terms of the message that he's got, I would definitely say he's the one who's the closest out there.
I think a pretty genuine guy, too. Pretty genuine guy. Of course, I guess it's easy for him to say, I think his book is called True Wealth or something like this, but But it's not the typical, you know, build your wealth kind of thing. It's more about build your confidence. And when you become confident, you'll become wealthy. And I had the book with me, and someone saw it, someone who's having a tough time, and they go, oh, it's easy for Tim Sanders to say build your wealth. He, like, you know, left Yahoo with, like, you know, 10 gazillion dollars. But what's the use of being negative, really, when you get right down to it? How is that going to help us? What is that going to do for us? It's not going to make us any better. So I want to encourage people to tune in next week to listen to our interview with Tim Sanders. I guarantee that'll be a great show. And a lot of other stuff coming up. Stay tuned to the Small Business Hour right here on the SBA Network. So please do this week. Have a positive, have a productive, and have a very profitable week. We'll see you next Monday.
The Small Business Hour is brought to you by CBeyond, the last communications company a small business will ever need.